Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jessica Levinson, a commissioner on the Los Angeles Ethics Commission and a professor at Loyola Law School, where she focuses on election law and governance issues, including campaign finance, ethics, and state budgets. She wrote an amicus brief for the Supreme Court in McCormish versus Bennett, the case in which Chief Justice John Roberts and four other justices ruled to limit public funding in elections. She's the editor of the blog polawtix.blogspot.com and has an article at Reuters, "Thanks to Congressional Inaction, Seeking Clarity from the IRS is No Joke." Welcome to Background Briefing, Jessica Levinson.
Thank you so much for having me.
And it looks like the window has closed on any possibility of reforming our out-of-control, money-driven political system as a result of the Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United, where these new social welfare vehicles known by the IRS as 501c4s are now just open for business as usual with no restraint. So what happened there? Why was there no efforts made to rein in this obvious flagrant abuse?
Well, I think I would say I think 501c4s are actually open for business as unusual. They aren't supposed to operate as political committees, which is basically how they operate. But to back up for a second, the Citizens United decision really opened the door for this to happen. Citizens United says corporations, you can spend unlimited sums from your general treasury funds, your main bank account, on so-called independent expenditures that advocate to elect or defeat a candidate. As a result of the reasoning in that case, smart political attorneys essentially realized that 501c4s were a good vehicle through which to raise and spend unlimited sums. And, you know, it's important to remember, of course, these are organizations that are so-called social welfare organizations. They receive the benefit of being tax-exempt from the government because they are supposed to promote the social welfare. They're supposed to be charities, for instance. And unfortunately, what has happened is that there is such loose guidance, meaning really very little guidance at all from the IRS, that these organizations have essentially been exploited and they're being used as political committees. Now what's happening is that the IRS actually is proposing new restrictions to say, if you want to spend money and you're essentially acting like a political committee, then you need to organize as such. And the real difference between a political committee and a 501c4, from my perspective, is disclosure. 501c4s spend money and we don't know who their donors are, meaning the public just doesn't know who's speaking to them, who's trying to sway their votes. Political committees do have to disclose their donors because we all understand that when I'm going to the ballot box and I'm trying to determine whether or not to give a particular argument any credence, I want to know who's speaking to me. So I'm somewhat hopeful that there will be regulatory reform in this arena.
But isn't this an extra giveaway to the wealthy who are more and more buying our politics? If you have, as a result of Citizens United, the ability on the part of billionaires and millionaires to buy our politics, then you allow them to buy our politics through a charitable front where there's no attribution to you, no fingerprints, and then on top of that, you get a tax deduction. Is that what's going on?
Well, so it's going on right now. I mean, my hope is that these reforms are actually implemented, and that means that these so-called dark money, the, you know, as you categorize it, the fingerprintless spending, actually does decrease. You know, Citizens United talks just about how much money can be given and spent, and the sad thing about that decision is that Justice Kennedy assumes that there will be a system of disclosure and transparency, and that that is what will save us because we will all know who's speaking to us. Unfortunately, I don't think he anticipated this explosion of inappropriate spending through 501c4s. And, you know, if we can at least clamp down on the ability to misuse those organizations, then I think, again, at the very least, we could get some sort of transparency. But it doesn't go to the issue of how much is spent, these, you know, avalanches of independent expenditures that try and sway our votes.
Again, I'm speaking with Jessica Levinson, who is a professor at Loyola Law School, where she focuses on election law and governance issues, including campaign finance, ethics, and state budgets. She wrote an amicus brief for the Supreme Court in McCormish versus Bennett, the case in which Chief Justice John Roberts and four other justices ruled to limit public funding in elections. And she has an article at Reuters, "Thanks to Congressional Inaction, Seeking Clarity from the IRS is No Joke." So given what happened with the last election, with people like Sheldon Adelson pouring money in, and the Koch brothers, of course, who are in both in 2010, and in many ways they helped sway that election, and of course in the last election, there are varying figures. The official figure is something like $7 billion was spent in the last election. A couple of really good reporters, John Nichols and Bob McChesney, have written a book called Dollarocracy. They tally it up at about $10 billion. The truth of the matter is you don't know, right, because of these vehicles like the 501c4s that don't give you any transparency. I mean, in terms of numbers, they have to reveal how much money, right? But they don't have to reveal who gives the money.
That's exactly right. So it is, I think, very hard to track exactly how much is spent to influence our elections, because so much of this money can be categorized as simply, you know, spending to promote a political purpose. So there's some fuzziness there. But as you point out, the real problem is, we oftentimes, I mean, we know Sheldon Adelson, we know the Koch brothers. The problem is that there are a lot of spenders that we simply don't know who they are, again, because of this inappropriate exploitation of the 501c4s. And, you know, so it's really a twofold problem. One, it's these massive sums of money being spent, you know, enough to fix so many problems facing our country and in other countries. And two, it's, you know, we really don't know the face and identity of the person behind that massive spending a lot of times.
So the chance then, I mean, when you say that the IRS is trying to reform the 501c4 or the abuse of the 501c4s, my understanding is that the IRS basically took a huge political hit from that story that came out of Philadelphia, where they were looking into some Tea Party funding, and that was blown up, particularly by the Republicans, into the idea that the IRS is on a partisan witch hunt against, you know, patriotic Americans trying to participate in their political process. So is that where it went off the rails, at least in terms of congressional action?
Well, I certainly think that's, you know, the IRS, that is where when it went off the rails, when the IRS, unfortunately, you know, I think a lot of members of the IRS were trying to figure out which one of these 501c4s that are spending money purportedly as social welfare organizations, which one of these are actually political committees. And I think they took inappropriate shortcuts. They looked to terms like Tea Party or conservative or, you know, heritage. I'm actually surprised that this didn't go off the rails earlier, given that there is such a broad standard for what is permissible for these 501c4 organizations. And, you know, again, what we allow is that they just have to make sure that their primary purpose is the promotion of social welfare. So we don't really designate how much of their spending cannot be political, and we don't really designate very clearly what is considered a political or, you know, somewhat inappropriate purpose. And that's what these proposed regulations only get at the second issue, which is what is political activity. And then the IRS has said, now we need to get to the first issue, which is what percentage of time and money of a 501c4 can be spent on political activity.
But there seems to be a real asymmetry here between the idea of citizens participating in their electoral process. And to some extent, MoveOn.org started that process with small donations. And the Obama people they organized a pretty effective online citizens operation. They raised quite a lot of money. That's not to say they didn't raise, I think, more from very wealthy individuals. But let's just take the example of the average American citizen, middle class, working Americans who don't have much disposable income. they don't get a tax deduction if they put $100 into their favorite candidate, right? Whereas these billionaires, if they use these 501c4s, they get a tax deduction. I just find that extraordinary. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but...
Well, I think that, you know, this is just one aspect of a situation in which the vast majority of Americans are shut out of the political process. If, you know, the game of politics, so to speak, has become really a game of pay to play. And I think from, you know, every moment in the political process, from who gets to run, well, who gets to run in large part is who has funding, to what are the issues we talk about. Well, the issues we talk about are largely those that are dictated by who is spending money to support or oppose candidates, to who ultimately has the money to reach the voters and then therefore get elected. So money has such a pernicious, pervasive influence on really every aspect of the political process as it stands. And this, I think, is one particularly problematic example of the tax-exempt organizations that are being misused by those who can afford to use them. You know, this increasingly becomes a situation where the vast majority of people simply can't think of using these vehicles to spend money in politics. Those people, if they're lucky, will have enough money for small contributions.
But the whole purpose of these 501c3s that the IRS have set up or allowed to be set up, they are tax-exempt foundations. And there's, what, C3, 4, 5, 6, or whatever, there's a whole bunch of them. But their overall purpose seems to be that if you want to have a charity, you can form one of these vehicles and you can take money that the donor is able to deduct taxes from, you know, that basically gets a tax break rather than pay at the normal rate. They pay much less if they put that money into a charity. And that's what they were designed to attract, money that was virtuous. And that's why the government gave you a break. I mean, that's my understanding.
Well, contributions to 501c4 organizations are not typically deductible as charitable contributions under federal income tax law, with a few exceptions. They can be deductible as business expenses under a certain code section, but what we're talking about here is really that the organization itself doesn't have to pay, is tax exempt.
And that is because as long as that organization educates but not advocates, isn't that the fundamental IRS rule?
Yes. I mean, the fundamental IRS rule actually says that these organizations are supposed to be organized exclusively for social welfare, which goes to these issues of education that you talked about. The problem is that I think that there's an argument, there is a fuzzy line between education and advocacy. So if I really want to educate people about pro-choice issues, then is one way of doing that to advocate for a candidate who has made her sole platform the education of pro-choice issues? So there becomes a somewhat fuzzy line, but, you know, to your point, these were not meant as political committees. They are not meant to be used as advocacy committees.
So this broken Congress, many of the Congress people who are up for re-election, they're all up for re-election in the House and the third in the Senate, starting quite soon in 2014, they obviously have no incentive to change this system. How much leeway does the IRS have?
Well, the IRS has leeway. I mean, it can and should impose regulatory changes. And I hope that the, you know, quote-unquote summer of 2013 IRS scandal helps to create some political momentum to implement these changes. You know, the problem that you elucidated is that the members of Congress, you know, the change isn't going to come from them in large part because, one, they can't even decide to, you know, keep the panda cam on. The federal government shuts down. And two, this is a group of people who have won under the current system, and therefore it becomes more difficult to ask them to implement changes. They do sometimes. You know, Congress implemented McCain-Feingold. But this particular change will have to come from the IRS, and I hope that it does. I mean, there are real regulatory reforms that can come from the IRS and the FEC and the SEC. The problem is that they just have to actually do it. And, you know, recently we saw the SEC back away from important reform dealing with disclosure for publicly traded organizations that spend money on politics. And so I hope the IRS doesn't follow suit. I hope that they do implement real changes.
And what are the chances of Justice Kennedy having a come-to-Jesus moment? I mean, he obviously, he's either naive or incredibly cynical. If he thinks that in the original Citizens United decision, there was enough leeway that there would be disclosure, that in other words, the sunlight on who's giving the money would be sufficient oversight for the public to know who was buying their politics. Immediately after the Citizens United decision, there was an effort to pass the Disclose Act to make that provision in Citizens United much more robust. The Republicans absolutely shut that down.
Right.
So how can he pretend that this is working the way he intended it to work?
Well, you know, we will see, we will have some insight potentially when the Supreme Court comes out with its next major campaign finance decision, a case called McCutcheon versus FEC, that deals with aggregate contribution limits. My guess is that Justice Kennedy will not change course. He's been rather consistent for decades in his belief that money that's given and spent in elections is essentially the equivalent of speech. And when we limit that speech, we're just forcing it into darker places. So, you know, if anything, I think anti-reform segments of the population could view the use of 501c4s and say, look, we told you all these restrictions actually just force money underground to dark, not transparent places, and that what we should do is just take the cuffs off completely. No contribution, no aggregate contribution limits. Then maybe the next issue is no base contribution limits. And then we have a pre-Watergate era kind of no limitations period. And I think that Justice Kennedy would say that will solve the problem, not more regulatory reform.
Well, Jessica Levison, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Jessica Levinson, who is a commissioner on the Los Angeles Ethics Commission and a professor at Loyola Law School, where she focuses on election law and governance issues, including campaign finance ethics and state budgets. She wrote an amicus brief for the Supreme Court in McCormish versus Bennett, the case in which Chief Justice John Roberts and four other justices ruled to limit public funding in elections. And she is the editor of the blog PoLawTics, that's PoLawTics .blogspot.com, and has an article at Reuters, "Thanks to Congressional Inaction, Seeking Clarity from the IRS is No Joke." This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared by